How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hello and welcome to the show. If you're enjoying it and want an ad-free experience, consider signing up for the Patreon, patreon.com/the101podcast. Get early access and exclusive content on there as well for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Links to ways of supporting the show are in the description. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy this episode. Welcome back to another episode of the 101 podcast. I'm your host, as always. Make sure to follow the show on social media at the 101 podcast, tjojp.com, patreon.com/the101podcast, all that good stuff. Call in 407-476-4606. I play your voicemails on the show. And today we are joined by somebody who helped inspire my show. And I found him, I think, 4 years ago through Lawrence Caruana, which he was one of my first interviews. But welcome to the show for the first time, Miguel.
Thanks for having me on.
Miguel, for those that don't know, where can they find you? What's your show, Aeon Byte Radio, all that good stuff? Let them know.
I think the best place would be thegodabovegod.com, or type in on your search bar, Aeon Byte, A-E-O-N, then B-Y, T-E, and it should come up, and my website has all the goodies, the podcast, social media, videos, courses. Just released a Gnostic Tarot, which hasn't been done before. Very excited. Worked with Matt at Altrucian Grace Media to get this going, and yeah, everything should be there.
That's awesome. So I'll put the links in the description. Miguel, for those that don't know about you, like I said, I learned about you through Lawrence on his presentation on Gnosticism, which Gnosticism for me was the gateway, I guess, to the rest of it all. When you start to realize, like, hey, a lot of people don't know, Miguel, but I was born and raised Pentecostal Christian. And when I started to read the Nag Hammadi, Dead Sea Scrolls, I'm like, wait a minute, there's the complete opposite of what I've been taught my entire life. There's the opposite of that. And then you got family members telling you, oh, stay away from that. Don't even utter it's blasphemous. It's heretical. And I felt dirty. Like, I felt like this uncleanliness as I was doing this research. But then you start to really accept things, and it's like, okay, well, I can look at this from a healthy perspective with having my boundaries, right? Because a lot of the times you talk about things and people assume, I know you have a lot of different guests, people assume that that's what you believe 100%. And it's like, no, I'm curious. I want to learn. And how can you learn without seeing other perspectives, even if you don't agree with them 100%? But Gnosticism did that for me. How'd you get started in this whole journey, I guess, in Gnosticism and esoteric and everything else?
Oh, I've always been on that journey. I was always the kid that just didn't fit. Felt like he was born in the wrong world. As a kid, I used to dream, well, maybe if I'd been born in the medieval times or the Roman times. Yeah, I do think about the Roman Empire every day, but that's because I do Gnosticism.
It never fell, right?
Yeah, right. So I was always thinking, playing a lot of Dungeons and Dragons, reading a lot of science fiction, just never really fit. It's like, it's that like Morpheus in the Matrix, there's something wrong with the world and it's driving you mad like a splinter in your mind. So I was always an outcast and a searcher, and it got me interested in different philosophies, religions. Unfortunately, it got me into a lot of wrong places, like drugs and the wrong crowd, crime, all that other stuff. So it's been a, as I call it, a spiritual hitchhiking. I always considered myself Roman Catholic, but my mom was always part of the ecumenical spirit of Catholicism, so it was always driven in my head to be very open to other religions, try them out, visit their temples and churches, read their works. My mom also was always very much about how the Hebrew Bible was myths, don't take it literally. So she kind of put that in my head about symbolism and allegory. So I just kept wearing different clothes, becoming a Buddhist one for a few years, atheist, going to ashrams, going to mosques, going to just trying different things. But Gnosticism was what you might say in my mid-30s or more, was what slowly satisfied the big answers in life. Well, what is evil? Why is there suffering? What's life after death? And it really gave me the best worldview for me. Now everybody's different, and I admit that all systems have flaws. Every religion or philosophy has holes in it. Nothing's perfect. I don't believe that everything will answer everything. You need to just sometimes embrace the ambiguity or experience the mystery of life. But Gnosticism for me has opened more the channels of communication within me and rationally satisfied how the world is.
Yeah, and that's what it did for me as well. And what I love about Gnosticism is that it teaches you like the origins, right, of reality itself, which to me, I believe that the Gnostics believed it was consciousness, right? The Father thinking, and then, you know, a thought of itself thinking, and then the Christos, the child, and all that stuff. And there's right, nothing is perfect. There's only like 45,000 different denominations of Christianity. Yeah. I'm sure that they can, right? They all have it together. And that's always baffled me, where how many meanings you can extract from one core set of beliefs, like one thing. And you have people who will argue up and down that, right, the elites don't use symbolism for nefarious purposes, which, okay, you can make that argument, but there's a reason why these symbols exist, and there's a reason why they've been used throughout thousands of years, including these groups, right? The underground, which were the Gnostics, right? The Ouroboros and all these different things. So it's like this is something I always think about. It's like, why things are the way they are, why these symbols exist, why these beliefs exist, like the paranormal. I don't know about you. I'll be driving sometime like, yo, I was thinking to yesterday or today, whatever it was, I was driving back home and I'm like, if Bigfoot was real, right, we have more cameras on the earth right now than we ever have had since the beginning of time. It's like, don't you think we would get a good, clear picture of a Bigfoot or something? Like, the best we got is the Patterson-Gimlin footage. Like, that's the best we got. Right. But some people still believe in it. It's like, well, is it interdimensional? Like, I don't know. And that's another aspect of Gnosticism that I love, the interdimensionalism of it. There was this lecture that I was listening to by Terrence McKenna, and I think it was called the Gnostic Astronaut or something like that. And he's talking about he talks about Philip K. Dick and how I guess spacey the Gnostics are, like, right, like you have the idea of the planetary spheres, the celestial bodies, and every single celestial orbit being a different dimension and a different demon, like the archons. It's very celestial, right? Like spacey. I know some people think space is fake and gay, but I've come to understand space as a different, not what they've taught us, because I've a lot of things, right, because again, this is about history. And I keep seeing this reemerging pattern over and over again, that it seems like the people who are onto something, right, one of them being the Gnostics, they're usually wiped out, right? The people who are preaching some sort of of extracurricular gnosis that goes against the mainstream, that is not what is culturally accepted. And I mean, the Gnostics were just that. They were definitely preaching stuff that was out of the norm. And even between them, there was more than 50 sects of Gnosticism. I mean, Gnosticism, for those that don't know what it is, I mean, that's more of a blanket term for a large group of people, and they all had their own beliefs. And do you know if they disagreed with one another? Do you know if there was like schisms or fights between them?
Oh yeah, yeah. Even the Nag Hammadi library, there is overt shots fired or casting shade on each other, like texts like the Testimony of Truth or the Apocalypse of Peter. And they are caught. One group is calling out the Simon Magus group, others calling out the Valentinians, Basilides. Yeah, yeah, they had no problem talking shit about each other. It's what you did in the sort of Hellenistic world. You believed everybody had the right to do what they wanted to do, but there was no problem talking smack about each other and challenging each other's ideas. Again, they were nonviolent, so it's not like it ever led to anything.
Do you have a favorite sect in Gnosticism by any chance?
Probably the Sethians. I think, as many scholars said, they're probably the more original Gnostics, and they were really, I think, sometimes the most hardcore, the most unapologetic, and they had some of the most intense theologies. Yet at the same time, their poetry and hymns is really beautiful, really ethereal. So I like the Sethians personally.
I have this idea of, right, Gnosis, because there are a lot of things that the Gnostics did that we don't know what it consisted of. Like, for example, the Book of Iao, like the more magical aspects of it. And I believe that once they achieved the Gnosis, which we don't know what it is or how you were able, right, it was just this divine knowledge that you stumbled across. And I think that the reason that we don't know about the Gnosis is because they fizzled out of existence once they learned the Gnosis. I feel like, I think it's either William S. Burroughs or I forgot who the hell said it, or it's like there is a string of letters and words that will destroy you as a person. It's like once you learn the real name of who is it? Is it Downard? Once you learn his real identity, like, you fizzle out of reality. Like, you learn who killed JFK. It's like, you know, you cease to exist. Like, you step outside of space and time and become this overseer of reality. And I think about that when I'm conducting research all the time. Like, I'm like, is this next sentence gonna be the one? Because sometimes you read one sentence and you connect a whole bunch of dots that you wouldn't have otherwise connected, right? And Gnosticism did that for me. It filled in those holes in the mainstream that I grew up. And there's a reason why my grandma, right, she would be so pissed if she heard the show, but she told me, like, hey, stay away from the Book of Enoch. Some family members even told me, stay away from the Old Testament. They're like, yeah, you know what? Just chuck that whole thing out. It's like, what do you mean? It's like, that's the canon, isn't it? It's like, yeah, but so you can't nitpick, you know, what you want. I mean, you're essentially manipulating somebody's reality. And I think that these books, I'll even count the Nag Hammadi and Dead Sea Scrolls, like what I call interdimensional literature, where it resonates throughout reality itself, almost like the plasmate that Philip K. Dick talks about, which we can get into. The Terrence McKenna in that lecture that I was listening to, sometimes, I don't know if you ever find yourself, I'll listen to something and it's like, man, this is garbage for like the first three quarters of it, right? And you're almost done with it. God, let me just power through it so I can get it off my playlist on YouTube. And that last 25 minutes, Terrence McKenna was just going off, talking about Valis, talking about the book Valis. And he's like, I wish I would have written that book. And he starts to fire off all these different things about Valis and Philip K. Dick's philosophies, where it's like, I never thought about it like that, how Philip K. Dick puts it, where they were, right, the frozen logos, the frozen word of God was in those caves. And I don't buy the mainstream narrative of how they found, right, these scrolls and these old texts. I was in Atlanta this past week for vacation, Stone Mountain, Georgia, and there was an exhibit on King Tut. And I went, and, right, they tell you this whole crazy story, how they found it. And it's like, I don't know if I buy that mainstream story. I don't know if I buy that discover, like how they say they discovered it, right? And same thing with the Nag Hammadi and the Dead Sea Scrolls. Like, well, they were throwing it in a fire and they were trying to. It's like, I don't buy that. I think that maybe they had access to it and they were just like, hey, this is too. Because how long did it take? Like 30 years, allegedly, to translate it? Was it Gianmarco Allegro was one of the people who also translated? Am I correct on that? Am I spreading fake news?
No, just for the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Nag Hammadi took longer than that. Probably about 79, 45 to 79. So it had to be gathered and put together. And yeah, there's definitely different versions. There's one version where the two brothers who originally discovered saw a skeleton with fangs and long claws by it. And there's some other sensationalistic versions. Yeah, there's many versions.
Really? Of it. I wasn't then, aware of that. So they found a vampire skeleton by the
text, or a Nephilim, one something like that. But yeah, that was one of the versions they told James Robinson and some of the other team.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it plays into, again, the concept of, were the Gnostics onto something, right? They were interacting with this word virus, right? This what I call grammatical entities, where once you interact with it, it's like the thing. You don't know who has it, but like once you interact with it, you're stuck with it for life. And this concept of they were at this border of the next evolutionary, you know, step. And that's why, again, when they link alchemy into that, it's like, no, the alchemists, they knew about this. They knew, and that's why they were looking for the Philosopher's Stone to push the evolution of man further, right? And step into that next, which was a cause of the interaction with the logos, what are they called? The homoplasma, is that what Philip K. Dick calls it?
Yeah, the plasmid. Yeah, that's not surprising. I mean, that area, Upper Egypt, Nag Hammadi, was a place where a lot of the first industrial chemical labs started. Mm-hmm. So it was all going on around that area, this sort of strange mysticism, which would eventually turn into Gnosticism and Hermeticism.
Yeah, and then obviously you have the Platonists, Neoplatonism, and all that good stuff, which, again, and this is what people need to understand about this. These are the people who paved the way for Catholicism and Christianity and all these other religions that we know and love today. I mean, this was the underground. This was the OG. And whenever I read these texts, I don't know about you, but I mean, it could be fan fiction, or it could be, because I think about this too. It's like, what's the difference between texts that somebody wrote, you know, 1,000 years ago versus something that, like, for example, Philip K. Dick, which some people consider him a sort of messianic figure, right? He was having these divine downloads, but it's like, who gets to pick that of who has divine downloads and not, right? It's like, if you have something talking to you, Miguel, what discredits you over, you know, insert your savior figure here? You know what I'm saying? Like, who gets to pick that? And I've witnessed miracles in front of me, and I've seen things, the supernatural, if you will, in the church. Because when the Holy Spirit is in the house, it's moving, right? And again, I'm not a practicing Christian, but I still do believe in God. I still do believe in a source. But it's like, I've never understood people like, oh, God spoke to me. It's like, are you sure it just wasn't your internal dialogue talking to you? It's like, do you have any thoughts on that, of how you can distinguish between like something otherworldly talking to you, or it's just like yourself? Because I mean, I talk to myself internally all the time.
Well, what would be the difference? I mean, if we go, even if we go Gnostic and we take it a step further, we go to Jung, who was obviously foundation of his work was Gnosticism. Whether it's your inner soul or from above, it's almost the same thing. I mean, that's a whole hermetic thing. And Gnostic thing, as above, so below, as outside, so within. We are housed in the universe. The universe is housed within us. Obviously, the concept behind the Gnostics and the Hermeticists would have to be shamanism. It was originally Egyptian, a continuation of the Egyptian mysteries. And therefore, it really was a form of shamanism. So the key is always an altered state of mind. How did you go? Did you have an altered state of mind? Was your consciousness expanded? Did you have revelations that you didn't have before? And of course, the other key too is, did you have a lot of synchronicities? That always, that gives away the game when you start seeing synchronicities and you start seeing things that weren't there before. So these things are obviously, you might say, they are valid and they are real in a very supernal type of way.
They are valid and they are valid, right?
Yeah. I actually
got this.
Are your dreams real? Well, they are real. It's just a different type of reality.
I don't know if you've ever read this book before, but I started a new podcast today. I'm going to say it today. Today is January 3rd, 2024, 6:24 p.m. Eastern. I haven't found a podcast named this, but started a new podcast, The Rippedon Society. And I don't know if you've ever read this book before, The Three Myths.
No.
Of gods, devils, and beasts by the Rippedon Society. And it gets into, it's like three separate. And of course, right, speaking of synchronicities, these people, I don't know if they were trolling me or not, but they put the paper of like the stock of where it's at on page 33, which I thought was really interesting. So I'm like, these people know it's about alchemy and they put it on page 33 to maybe mess around with me or not. But it's about, see here, it's a Cycles of the Phoenix, the Baphomet in History and Symbolism, and the Mad God's Sacraments. But apparently it's from 98, I think, 97. And it's the Rippedon Society. It was like, it was almost the brand new. I think it was almost like 200 something bucks, but I got it for like 40 bucks or something. But I'm going to be reading it. It's got to do with, obviously, Philip K. Dick. But yeah, the idea of, so an altered state of consciousness, because I don't, right, so there's you have the Carl Jung, the shadow self, right? Looking within, the whole red book aspect of it, all that, the alchemical aspect of right, speaking with yourself. And the thing with that of distinguishing between divinity and yourself, it's like, I personally don't believe that we can achieve godhood, right? Because at the core principle of a lot of these religions is the imitation of God. But that's almost heretical in a sense, right? Imitation of God. Well, some people go, no, it's to be Christ-like, not to achieve and try to usurp God himself. It's like, no, you have to live in a way where you're imitating, right, these core principles, like the Ten Commandments. You know, follow the Ten Commandments. At the core of the Ten Commandments, don't be a piece of shit. Right? Be a good person. Don't lust. Don't respect your family. Essentially is what it is. I mean, that's not hard to follow. But some people, obviously some people have a hard time doing that. But the idea of being a, because that's at the core of Gnosticism, no? Becoming a God, like you are divine, right? You have the divine spark in you because, yeah, the Baoth was, you know, it came from divinity, although he was the abortion, essentially. But he did still have some divinity within him. Therefore, you are divine. And again, that's the kicker in Gnosticism. Is like, no, you weren't created by God. You were created by a lesser God. And he created this reality to trap you in it. So we get this whole simulation concept. And again, this is elementary. But for those that don't know, who are trying to follow along, that's the hard pill to swallow when it comes to Gnosticism. And I remember when I first learned about Gnosticism, and really started diving deep into Gnosticism, and I told people about it. They were like, "Oh, you worship Satan now?" It's like, what? I even say it? I'm just explaining to you a cosmology. But again, it goes back to the beginning where I mentioned when you talk about certain things, people automatically believe that's what you believe. That's what you know, accept. And it's like, no, I want to learn the truth. But again, I think these people were onto this, similarly to how they silence people today on YouTube and on all these platforms. Like, if you weren't speaking something that would, right, shake the empire to its core or something, then why would they bother with you, right? Like, if you're not saying something that's valid. So they silence you and therefore they validate you at the same time. Because, I mean, people brag all the time about getting kicked off of YouTube or all these other, you know, Instagram by the shit that they post, right? Like the truther community takes that as a, what the hell do they call it? Anyways, they take that as a marker, like, oh, I did good. It's like, no, bro, it's like, what better way than to hack their system than to exist within their ecosystem? And if you have to self-censor a little bit, then so be it. That's the way, that's the alchemical way. That's why they spoke in these symbols, because they were trying to occult it from those that they didn't want obtaining the knowledge. Like, you can read these books all you want, you're not going to understand it because you're not initiated, right? And I feel like a lot of the texts of the Gnostics that we don't know today what they were for has to do with that. And one of the concepts that has always, and I want to talk to you about, is the concept of Abraxas. And like, I still don't understand alchemy after all the hours and hours that I've put into it. But can you break down Abraxas for us? And what exactly, or who is Abraxas? And from your point of view.
Oh, dear. Sorry, I've been listening to you. You're all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm wondering what am I doing here?
Sorry. I'm sorry.
It's like you've got it.
Abraxas.
Abraxas. Well, it depends. Do you want a Jungian or the Gnostic, ancient Gnostic view?
Ancient Gnostic view.
Well, we really don't know. That is the mystery right there. He appears originally in coins, magical coins, and usually it's a depiction of a being that you want to either avoid, that his cosmic powers will not notice you, or you can summon. There are spells of Abraxas. Somebody found a spell, ironically, recently during the pandemic, about somebody having a pandemic in London, and he was invoking Abraxas.
What?
And he appears, yeah. This. And
do you know the name of it? Abraxas.
Abraxas, I don't know, pandemic, yeah. I put it up somewhere. And then he appears in magical papyri as some sort of creator being. But the first person to talk about is a Gnostic sage called Basilides in the 2nd century Alexandria. And he divides the universe into 365 dimensions. And Abraxas is the highest of all the rulers of all the dimensions. The lowest one would be the God of the Hebrew Bible, Yahweh, and he puts Abraxas. The problem is, we don't know if he meant Abraxas is like the chief archon, or is he some sort of god above God. So he appears in different places, but it's pretty mysterious, and he continues to appear in magical tomes and so forth across history. This being that's rooster head, human body, snake legs, chariot driving, this sort of yeah, very enigmatic being. In fact, the founder, Pete Carroll, of Chaos Magic, always said that Abraxas came in second place instead of Baphomet for one of the patrons of Chaos Magic. So he appears here and there. We know that the Knights Templar, when they were the seal to guard their treasures was Abraxas, an image of Abraxas. So it's a powerful symbol that magicians and Gnostics use, but it's very secretive. At the end of the day, we know very little.
That was another one for me, Baphomet, wanting to understand exactly what Baphomet was. And obviously through that you find Tracy Twyman's work, Alex Rivera, and that was like my gateway, the Baphomet gateway. And from there I poked my head in through that rabbit hole and kept going, and here I am 4 or 5 years later, still trying to figure it out. It's like, the more you look into, and that's part of the occult too, the more you look at it. I think it was Folconelli or something that I was reading where he talks about how these subjects, they morph right in front of you, right? So you have the Templars, this, even they're enigmatic, and they're, would they have been Gnostics, the Templars?
There's good evidence for it. I mean, why would they be using the seal of Abraxas? And of course, if Baphomet, as Tracy Twyman and Alex Rivera say, they were doing some sort of baptism to Sophia, We also know that they dedicated their churches to Mary Magdalene, or built their churches. So we have another clue there. Their interaction with groups like the Assassins, Muslim Gnostics, other things seems to be pointing at it. We can't, I mean, obviously there's no smoking gun like we do with other groups like the Cathars. Yeah,
yeah.
They rub shoulders with the Cathars in certain places. So as a scholar once said, all we have is dots, but there's a lot of dots to connect. So I would lean towards it, yeah.
Who were the ones that the Nazis were messing around with trying to find artifacts? Was that, what year was that?
They definitely visited the Cathar land.
Yeah, the Cathar.
For the Holy Grail, yeah.
Yeah, Southern exactly. France, yeah. And that was another thing, like, and this is why it's so, because history, right, if you want to believe it, because you have the crowd that doesn't even believe, right, the mainstream history, which is fine, right? Like, we're here to question it. It's like, you can't question, if you don't even believe, you know, what can you believe, essentially? Like, what's there left to believe if you can't even, right? There was no Dark Ages. There was no, like, this whole Scaligerian chronology and all these concepts. But so we have this, the Templars almost being like a, right, they were the church's mercenaries at the forefront, but then behind the scenes, they were worshiping these entities, these interdimensional entities. They had all these amulets that were being prophesied to. And I never understood, was the head of John the Baptist, would Baphomet prophesize through the head? Was that the whole, and I'm going to show you something that I, on a presentation that I've been working on in regards to, like, I want to talk about Philip K. Dick today too, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Have you heard of the missing head of Philip K. Dick?
The missing head? You talking about the robot head?
Yeah, the robot head. You ever hear about that?
Oh yeah. That's a blast.
Like, how wild is that? And I linked that to, obviously, right, we have the, I got the slide here. We have the Teraphim, right? That. And then the guy that made that android, he had also made a head of himself in 95. He built a humanoid head in his own likeness. And he's the guy that's with the robot Sophia.
All right.
So, and then of course you have him, because something, again, how I mentioned at the beginning, some people considered him a sort of messiah figure who was getting downloads from something otherworldly. And I've heard different, because I just got into Philip K. Dick not long ago, and I started with Valis. And there's some things, like, for example, your show, when I first stumbled across it, there's some things that I didn't understand because I wasn't there yet, right? It feels like sometimes you have to attune yourself to certain frequencies to be able to grasp the message. And it's like, Philip K. Dick, if I would have heard of Philip K. Dick and started at the beginning of my journey, I wouldn't have understood it, like, at all, because it's so heavy and the implications are so great, right, of what he's saying, that it completely changes, but it fills in those holes within history, right? What are your thoughts on Philip K. Dick as far as, have you ever read this book, The Palm Tree Garden of Philip K. Dick?
The Palm Tree Garden? No, I have not.
So it's, I forgot who it's by. I'll get you the name. I'll send you a copy. But the Palm Tree Garden is a, let me find it
here. Yeah, I know what it is, this concept, but.
Yeah, the concept of the Black Iron Prison. I'll send you a copy. I'll email you a copy after this. But how'd you stumble across Philip K. Dick, and what are your thoughts on him?
Well, obviously, I'd seen movies based on his work. Blade Runner, Total Recall, all that, Minority Report, but never connected it into anything higher. And then as I started studying about Gnosticism in the early 2000s, I kept running into Philip K. Dick. And in fact, it was, I really wasn't grasping what the Nag Hammadi Library was saying, even though it sounded so familiar, like the story of Sophia felt so natural, like it really belonged in Christianity. But it was Valis that really crystallized what Gnosticism was and what Gnostic thought was. And then the sequel, or the companion, the Divine Invasion, did it for me. And I just became an acolyte of his work and his ideas since then.
A dickhead? Is that what they call him?
Yeah, I guess that's what they call him. Yeah, embrace. Yeah, perfect.
And the story, you mean like the whole her, you know, wanting to give birth without consent, like that whole thing? Is that what you're saying that resonates with you? Because it's almost archetypal.
It's like I was remembering a story. Plus, it just made sense that Christianity should have a divine feminine principle. It just seemed instinctually and intuitively natural. So, and of course, the idea of the demiurge just made sense, you know, back then, because, well, the Hebrew Bible is the Hebrew Bible, and this world is the mess that it is. No higher intelligence could have designed this universe. It's just self-evident, if you know what I mean. Intelligent design is more like unintelligent design. And so it sort of made sense, but sometimes things, like you said, they don't, even if you read it over and over, it doesn't really enter your, get under your skin or really enter into your heart until certain things spark without you. It's like anarchism. I kept reading about anarchism and I just couldn't get it. And then one day it made sense. A lot of it is programming. We are slaves to the programming of our culture, our religion, our parents, our ancestors. So even if it's so obvious that, you know, the government is a complete construct of our head and a complete terrorist organization, it was very hard for me because I'd been programmed about democracy and paying your taxes and all that other bullshit. And it's the same with Gnosticism. There was still some Catholic programming and all that. But Philip K. Dick really brought it home because he couched it in such very ingenious how he couched it in modern times and sort of a fantasy, science fiction, social, philosophical arena. And it just went poof. It just made sense.
Yeah, it's like the latest Kevin Spacey debacle with what's his face? It's the other guy, the commentator guy, the famous guy that got. Anyways, they did like this thing on Twitter. I forgot the hell is this guy's name? Kevin Spacey and.
No, the guy that used to be on Fox. What's
his name? Yeah, I'm trying to remember his name too, so. Kevin Spacey. Oh my, it's gonna kill me now that Twitter. This is how disconnected I am from like the mainstream media. But obviously you see these people over and over again. Anyways, people know what I'm talking about. The whole weird talk that they did a week ago, whatever it was. And one thing that he said in that stood out to me, because it's how you're saying about the presentation of this occult knowledge. And this is why I always tell people, you have to read Genuflect. Like, once reading Genuflect will change your life. Like, when I read that book, and I'm friends with SB, and he was really close with Tracy, it's like, I'm like, how does somebody stumble across something like this? And I've always wondered, Miguel, how certain people, even within the community, they're able to come up with certain ideas. And you know, sorry to break it to people, but there are some of your heroes are in touch with ultra-terrestrials to a certain extent, like a Philip K. Dick, right? He was in touch with what he called it. It had a name that he called it. The
he
voice
had many names: Zebra, Valis, Sophia. Yeah, I don't get to again worry about the. I just call it the other, whether it's coming from within or without. It's this other that makes contact with you.
But how do you think that, because I make the mistake to think that everyone's in, that likes this sort of stuff, but it's like, how do people who don't have any clue of what the occult or any esoteric concept, how do they live their life? How do they, you know what I mean? Like, how do people go, how do they just mindlessly?
Ignorance is bliss.
Ignorance is bliss, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, the guy in the Matrix, Cypher. I know this steak isn't real, but it tastes so good. I just want to go back to my safe life. 9 to 5, eat some steak, get a girlfriend. Don't ask questions. Be part of the herd. It's going to be safe. The government will take care of you. And voila, live your life and then lights out. And that's the best you'll do. I think that's the most of humanity. It's
how do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Just want to remind everyone, make sure to check out the show on Patreon, patreon.com/the101podcast. I constantly get emails, oh, only one episode a week. Yeah, one episode a week for the public, but for as little as $5 a month, you can get up to two, sometimes three, sometimes one episode per day on the Patreon, as well as on the YouTube channel as a member for as little as $5. And there's also on the Patreon over 250 episodes only found on there. There's an extensive backlog of episodes. So check that out. If, for those interested, for those asking, make sure to follow the show on YouTube, Juan Juan Podcast. Also, Juan Juan Media. I am going live every Tuesday on there streaming. I also go live on twitch.tv/Juan on Juan Podcast. So make sure to check me out on there. Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern. And make sure to get your copy of the Occultus Mundi Homunculus Owner's Manual, all that good stuff at tjojp.com. Can pick up your copies there or go over to the Ko-Fi. I'm on Facebook, Twitch, Kick, Rumble, all that good stuff. You know where to find it. And enjoy this episode.
Kind of tempting. I mean, it is kind of tempting because the Mystic Road or the Red Pill Road is pretty brutal. You're going to turn your back on everything you knew. The deprogramming is painful, but God, that feeling of ecstasy and the truth and feeling of elevating yourself to other realms and seeing reality for what it is and finding your purpose and how you might help wake up others, that's amazing, but it's a tough road.
Do you regret like studying this sort of stuff ever? Do you ever think about that? Like,
I paid a huge price. I mean, God, my life was turned upside down once I got into Gnosticism. But no. I mean, if there's any regrets, I'd say I wish I'd focus more on the experience, on the ecstatic, altered states of mind, and a little bit less on the intellectual process. Because I think that's what the Gnostics were doing. Again, they were shamans. It's like, yeah, it's okay to study and research. And of course, as you mentioned, you can read a book or watch a good movie or something and your consciousness will change. I mean, you can feel reality shifting and you close the book and you realize I will never be the same or I will never look at the sky the same. Something has changed in me forever and I'm on a different path, which is great. But once you get into those rituals, it's even better because then it really breaks down your ego and it gets you into higher realms of experience and you find it easier to find your mission and to really deal with the world.
And is this using the aid of psychedelics or?
Well, that's the rub. The Gnostics were never a one size fit all. And it's frustrating. People walk away because I'm like, you know, whatever rocks your boat, like Jung said, your salvation is your salvation. What do you want, a BuzzFeed listicle like other religions give you? Do this, you'll go to heaven. The Gnostics were split into all these lodges, and they all had different ways because they all had offered different experiences. Some did, yeah. Some probably did entheogens. Other did, as you said, vowel magic or vowel rituals where you kind of go into an altered state of mind. Others was some sort of weird baptism. Others was meditation and contemplation. Other was sex magic. So it just varied, and it has varied throughout history because that's the hardest thing you'll do is somebody telling you, you know, figure your shit out. What works for you? What works for you might not work for me. Maybe you like alchemy. Maybe I like ritual magic. Maybe I just like to sit outside by a lake and look at nature, and that'll get me a mystical experience. So that's what I always tell people. Find what works for you and keep doing it. But the goal is gnosis, that altered state and that direct experience with the divine, plus a breaking down of your false reality, of your program ego, because most of what we are frauds. We're just programmed. We're not really not real in any shape, way, or form, or lasting way. Yeah, we're one-time miracles. There's one Juan, one Miguel in this universe, and those are amazing miracles that will never happen again. But the big prize is that higher self, that higher mind.
Where are you from, Miguel? Are you Hispanic?
No, I'm Portuguese. I was born in Portugal. So I'm Portuguese-American, dual citizenship. But I did live in Mexico for a long time, in Peru.
Okay, yeah, my wife's Brazilian, so I'm familiar with the... No, I've heard you kind of speak Spanish sometimes, but I wasn't really sure if you were Hispanic or not. But, I mean, Portugal, that's... Would that be a Spain, right? I mean, that's kind of Spanish too, no?
Might be. No, Portuguese. The Brazilians got Portuguese from the Portuguese. Yeah, yeah. Right. Used to be a Portuguese colony.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's kind of like the phonetics is... Kind of, I can understand Brazilian or Portuguese, but I can't speak it all that well, right? So it's kind of like phonetically, it's still there, so you can see that. But
it's a romantic language, so yeah. They're same source.
So this vowel magic, I love that. I'll have to look that up. But this idea, it's a scary experience, right? Once you start to question your own. And that can drive, this is why it's not for everyone either, because when you peer into the abyss starts to peer back into you. You have like this Nietzschean aspect of it. And then you have some people who will argue against like, you know, the use of magic, whether that be ceremonial or otherwise. And it's like, you have guys, right? The one that everyone knows, Crowley, where in my opinion, these guys, maybe Crowley drove people around him insane because he was probably dumping it off on them. But a lot of these guys went insane. Like, look at Jung, right? At the end of his life, he was, well, worshiping Abraxas? Is that what it was?
No. He didn't go. He forced himself to go insane for his Red Book experience.
Yeah.
And in fact, and all the supernatural stuff was happening in his house while he was going inward, like... People would hear doorbells and things moving. It was attested by his family, and he even had a gun. He said, mm-hmm. if I go insane, if this is too much, I'm gonna end it. But he came back, and that's the whole point. The whole idea of the mystery religion and the Gnostic rituals is you go to the underworld and you go deep. The underworld represents your unconscious, that place that has. I mean, the ancients described it as a place full of demons and dark gods, but you could say it's a place that has your trauma that needs to be healed and your shadow and the things that you haven't resolved and the missions that you knew so well as a child and you've repressed them. And now they're calling to you, and you have to go face them. And then in these rituals, you go into the underworld. And the Nag Hammadi Library has them. And then suddenly... You go into the underworld, you get these powers, you defeat these dark gods, and then you go into these astral flights through star portals. And again, this could just mean your higher mind. Take it forever, any way you want, mystical, psychological. It doesn't matter because the experience is the same. I mean, that's what Jordan Peterson said, right? Why does the dragon guard the treasure? Because that's the last place we want to go. But that's a place we have to go. We have to go confront the dragon in the cave because that's where the treasure is. That's where our true selves is, our destiny, everything. So, yeah, it is scary, and there's always a risk. Jung might have not made it. Philip K. Dick might have not survived his Valis experience. I mean, you know, there's no guarantees in this universe. You just don't know. But again, what do you want to do? Be like Cypher and eat your steak and live in the Matrix? I mean, fine. If that's what rock, you know, the world isn't going to get too bothered by your decision. That's what I realize. There's a huge battle and a whole cosmic fight and all that. And you want to join? Join. If not, you know, enjoy enjoy being an NPC.
Yeah, I'm what you call an armchair cultist, Miguel. I read about all this stuff, but I haven't really tried anything for myself.
No, you better. Meditation. Just try meditation. Start with that or prayer. You know, vowel or don't do the Hezekiah, the Jesus prayer. Stay away from that one.
Which one? Let me write it down so I know what to stay away.
The Greek prayer. It's called the Jesus prayer in Greek Orthodoxy. It's probably the most powerful way to have a mystical experience, but you need to do it with a priest. You need to do it with an or because if you do it by yourself, it's just one sentence you say over and over again. Lord Jesus Christ, and you do it with the beats of your heart, a special way, man, you will see God soon. But if you don't do it with a priest, it will destroy your sanity. So but that, just meditation, start slowly, 15 minutes a day, build on it, and then something will tell you, oh, maybe I need to try in theogens, maybe I need to go to church, maybe I need to, I don't know, whatever you can.
Yeah, I've done the sensory deprivation. I mean, that's
oh wow,
pretty trippy. There you go. But it's like how you're saying, right? This darkness, because there's a lot of darkness, right? Being human, right? There's a lot of intrusive thoughts, which goes through everyone's heads. And I don't know if it's human nature where you're driving down the road. Hey, what would happen if I veer into the other oncoming? Like, what is that? Are those the archons that are trying to get a hold of us and right, make us?
Well, that's why the Gnostics over in the Hermetic tracts, it always says Hermes or Jesus, they're like, still yourself, just quiet, just sit there. And it's a practice so you can start listening and you can understand what are the good voices, what are the bad voices. And even the bad voices have
good, you know, things to
they have, yes, your archons, the dragon has the treasure, it has the gifts that could help you. So that's why you have to, I mean, somebody once asked me what's enlightenment. I said, it's just learning to listen. Nobody knows how to listen. Nature is talking to us. Our bodies are talking to us. Our wives are talking to us. And we know we're not listening to them. I mean,
100%.
But if we learn to listen, that's because I realize women have a completely different language, but they do have an amazing language. We just don't know how to, it's hard to explain left animus, but once we just sit there and breathe and just listen, then suddenly it's easy. It becomes effortless to know what's real, what's not. What does your body want? What does nature want? What do your ancestors want? What does God want? But that's the key. That's why it's so important. Gnostics, like the Buddhists, were like, just shut up and breathe. Just calm down. And it's very hard for us to do today. But now when I do my meditations exercise, I'm like, oh, this is a part of me I really like, because all I do is listen. That's all I do. And that's where the gold is.
I have difficulty with that, the quieting, right? And I think that is part of how you're saying that hard programming, especially nowadays where we know fears are passed down genetically. We know this is encoded in the DNA. So being able to break out of that, maybe that, right, that was the gnosis of being able to quiet the mind, and instead of laying in the sensory deprivation tank for 2 hours and thinking about that email or that phone, I think I hear my phone vibrating, and that was the one for me. It's like, damn, I think somebody's calling me. I hear my phone vibrate. I wouldn't even have not one text, and it's like, well, you know, I don't know about you, but sometimes I hear my phone, dude. Like, I'll hear my phone, or I'll feel it in my pocket. I have to stop what I'm doing to feel my. It's like we're connected all the time. What's the most profound experience you've had, like divine experience through meditation? Because I know that, I forgot what it's called, but even the Rosicrucians and their idea of the Gospel of John and repeating it over and over again to enter the text. I forgot what it's got an official name, but essentially to enter the text and interact with whatever's on the other side. And I've even seen the Rothschilds, right? The Rothschilds, the Illuminati, or the lizard people, whoever, that they rule the world. I don't know if you've ever seen the Rothschild Canticles, which is this, I think it's a red book actually. At Yale, because Yale has all the cool shit at it. And it's about these plates where you would meditate on the plates to interact with the Godhead, with divinity, with whatever it was. And it's got like some weird butthole looking Jesus. I'll show you here in a second. But what's the most profound experience you've had as far as like mystical, you know, in your meditation?
Sure. Hold on. Let me let the cat out.
Yeah.
One second.
Pull this up here real quick so you can see it. So this is, it is a red book, of course. And I've showed this before to people, but these are plates and you're supposed to meditate upon these plates. They're mandalas essentially, right? And they're in the collection of the Rothschilds, and they have a whole bunch of other books too, by the way. But the more interesting aspect of this book and the reason why it's weird is because of this here. So you have this weird almost Cthulhu-esque, and what it's showing is, you know, the, what people explain it to be, these are rays of light, but they were trying to depict and trying to show the that looks like, those are octopus tentacles. I mean, those are tentacles. Those look like tentacles to me. And they were trying to essentially depict the Trinity, because that's one of the more, I remember as a kid struggling with, what the hell is the Trinity? My grandma trying to explain it to me. It's like, well, he is God, but he's also Jesus, but he's also the Holy Spirit. It's like, what? Imagine
that makes no sense.
Imagine a 12-year-old kid trying to grasp. I don't know how old your kids are, Miguel, but I have a 1.5-year-old and a 5-year-old. And when he's 12 years old, I don't know how I'm going to be able to explain to him the Trinity. But look, this is
tell him it makes no sense.
So what's one of the more profound experiences that you've had? Because I really like what you're saying. I'm going to try it out, Miguel. This is a new year, right? I set the goal of also reading the Bible more this year, because it's an interesting book, right? And I haven't read Revelation since I was like 13 or something like that, 12 years old. So I'm going to start reading the Bible more, and right, not taking it everything all at face value, but like trying to extract gnosis from. That's the whole idea of gnosis, right? So whatever's sacred to you.
Yeah. Whatever rocks your boat and whatever calls you.
Can you tell us about what your more profound experiences are by doing meditation?
I've had a few with meditation, different ones, but the most intense ones have always been with ayahuasca. And again, that's the other thing I always advise. Just like the ancient Gnostics and Hermeticists, have a good hierophant, have a good shaman or priest, or don't go at it alone, because you're just falling right into the archon. Your programmed mind is going to find a way to sabotage you, usually. So have somebody that will guide you into the underworld or through the doorways of perception or whatever you want to call you. But I had my uncle was the head of a Santo Daime, which is a Brazilian mystical order, Christian, that uses ayahuasca. And I have had the most intense experiences, out of body, traveling across the spheres. My first time or third time, that's when I met Abraxas, which was this giant void that covered the entire universe. And it was the scariest thing I'd ever seen, because it was moving, it was breathing, it was staring right at me. And it was terrifying. And then last summer I had one where I left the world, and the whole world was this illusion. And I realized this whole universe, it goes back to Terence McKenna and his lecture where he talks about the universe is an apparatus to trap the logos. And in my vision, the entire universe was this digital machine that was here to trap Jesus and trapped him at the center. And it was amazing. And then I had another one where I just started going through time. I was lost for like 100 years, and I experienced that 100 years and somehow came back, you know, and 20 minutes had passed during the ceremony, because you're dancing and doing all this singing in Portuguese and doing all these hymns. But, you know, once the ayahuasca hits you, you're gone. You're gone somewhere else. So, but again, that's for me. It's to each his own. Some people do ayahuasca and they're like, I'd rather do something else, mushrooms. Other people don't want to do entheogens. So I'd say test the waters. But again, think of an altered state of mind. Could be prayer, meditation, could be, it doesn't matter what it is, could be creating. Some people, when they do art, they just go, their consciousness completely changes and they go into an altered state of mind. It could be
Lawrence,
anything,
right?
Yeah, perfect example, visionary art. So it's up to you. You're unique. You have a mission. You don't need anybody else to give you a one size fit all, join the pack. But that's the hardest thing you'll ever do, because who wants to make their own decisions, right? That's not how humans are. We're pack animals. We want to play it safe and not be attacked by wolves if we're all together in a herd all doing the same shit.
And that's the one thing about ayahuasca I've never liked. I'm okay with, I'd rather shit my pants, but I hate throwing up, right? So the purging is the one thing that, because I've heard some trippy stories of people on ayahuasca and, right, the benefits of it, but also it's like some people don't even purge at all. But it's like, to me, I don't know, man. I threw up the first time the other day, for like the first time in like 18 years. And my wife had never heard me throw up. I mean, I had never seen me throw up. And she's like, yeah, that's how you know it was bad, because you're throwing up. Because I'd rather shoot myself in the big toe than throw up. So it's like, but again, I've tried the mushrooms one time. It was a really bad trip. And I haven't tried it
since. Were you alone?
I was alone. And it was at the peak of COVID.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. We were egocentric creatures.
I said I could. Yeah. I was like, hey, you know, I could do it. It's a low dose, and I grew my own mushrooms. Like, I grew them myself. It was, again, it was a mystical experience for me. It was very like, oh, this is something that I took all these weeks to nurture and take care of and watch it, you know, from essentially a bag of seeds to this thing. And it was, again, it was an alchemical process. So the whole thing was spiritual in a way for me. But then as soon as I got in there, they kicked me around. And they really...
That's not a bad thing. Purging is good. That's the whole point of the mystery religion or the voyage. You have to. You have to die, as they say. Simple. You go to the underworld and you die.
Oof. It's like, I think it was at the Knights Templar that had the ritual where they would, I think, drown you or put you out.
I don't know who did. There's so many secret societies. I know in some Freemason ones, or I forget which one, Freemasons or Martinists. Yeah, they put you in a grave first before you're initiated. And it makes perfect sense, because that's the whole deal. I mean, the Gnostics always said you don't resurrect in the next life. You resurrect in this life. You die like Jesus in this life and you rise. So a new creature is born. That's a whole alchemical process. You break it down, you get a pure substance, and a new being rises from it.
Yeah, I've heard alchemy be put that way too, right? The animating of matter, essentially, is what it is, right? Inanimate matter, you know, stuff that's not, and giving it life in some sort of way, right? And obviously, I've done I'll have to send you one, Miguel, the homunculus owner's manual. You can learn to tame your homunculus. 33 pages full of homunculus goodness. So I don't know if you got a P.O. box or not. I'll send you one, Miguel. But I've done...
Cool, it's like a chick track.
Yeah, it's like a little chick track, and
I love those, the Cthulhu ones. I used to collect chick tracks. He's a brilliant writer. Yeah, I love those.
Yeah, essentially that's what it is, done by Paranoid American. And alchemy is such a interdimensional topic, and the Gnostics were, you know, they were alchemists. The Zosimos of Panopolis, and I think you had Tobias on not too long ago, and he talked about Zosimos, and obviously Jung was... He loved alchemy as well. So, but the idea of interacting with something outside of yourself, and I've heard it put that the dark self reveals all the secrets of the universe to you once you're able to talk to it. But some people don't come back. And you said earlier that he didn't go insane. He drove himself purposely insane. Is that what you said about Jung?
Yeah. He wanted to have a psychic breakdown, which meant, just break everything, and he wanted to go inside into his soul, into his within, into his personal unconscious, and come back with the images and symbols and other gifts. And that's what he did. And he came back with Jungian psychology. That was the gift he came to the world. And that was his idea. He wanted to teach people everybody has a soul. Everybody has this unconscious that has most of what we are. Our ego is just like the tip of the iceberg, but who we really are goes deep. And this part of us is a place of symbols and archetypal images and myths and this stuff, this non-linear language and time. But that's how we become individuated or divine or whatever you want to call it. So that was Jung's purpose, and that's what he accomplished. And again, this goes back to the mystery religions, the Gnostics, the alchemists. You go deep into the underworld, you find the dragon, you get the treasure, and you come up a new creature.
And the concept of Philip K. I think it was Philip K. Dick, either that or Terrence McKenna, one of the two, where they talk about how, right, reality is a machine. Like, reality itself is a sort of computer, if you will. And it injects the viruses as these messiah figures. So essentially what he was getting at is that all these messiah figures that we see throughout history was of the system trying to save itself by injecting them into this reality. But obviously we know what happens to these figures, that, right, Jesus was obviously crucified, and there's a whole bunch of different speculation behind that. But the idea that it's constantly trying to save you, it's like the story of the guy where it's like, you know, he's drowning, you know, it's like a boat comes by, and you know, God will save me, God will save me. Another one comes by, whatever it was, and when he gets up there, he's like, "What? How you didn't save me?" He's like, "Bro, I sent you help twice. You know, like, you just chose to ignore it." But it gets into that concept of what you were saying, like learning to hear God, the voice of God, right? And but being able to distinguish it. And Philip K. Dick talks about how when he was, I think it was after he finished Divine Invasion, the voice stopped talking to him for a while. But he said that it would only happen to him when he was just waking up from, you know, sleep in this hypnagogic, he called it a hypnopompic state. So he was in this very, he's like, you had to listen. And once you were able to listen, it was very faint, but you were able to hear it. And it's like, are those the early stages of schizophrenia? It's like, are schizophrenics on to something? Or like, I know schizophrenics and they don't really, they're not extracting any information that they didn't otherwise know. It's like from their memories that these entities are showing them whatever it is that they're showing them. So, and we've always been taught like, oh, well, schizophrenic, they don't think correctly, right? They're just crazy. It's like, are they? Or are they tapping into something, right? Their brains are wired differently, where how you were saying, they're able to decipher and hear maybe a more than one voice. And how you're saying the bad ones sometimes have good advice. They have good things to offer for us to use here. And that's like quantum computing. I don't know if you've ever seen the whole Geordie Rose guy from the D-Wave. And I know right now aliens are a topic. I want to get your thoughts on the whole extraterrestrial UFO disclosure type of thing that's going on. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think... So we have some people who think space is fake and gay, aliens are fake and gay. It's all fake and gay. None of it matters. What are your thoughts on this whole disclosure thing that's going on right now, heavily in the governmental spheres of things?
Well, obviously it's the government. I don't, I know something's off, and I know I can't believe them. So they say about NASA, never a straight answer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's their fault people think space is fake and gay because they keep contradicting themselves and lying. I mean, maybe it is real, but they've done a terrible job. It's like science. They just either they're inept or they just bought into their own bullshit. But so I don't buy it. It's like the old saying, never believe anything until the government has officially denied it. This is the opposite. So beliefs. But yeah, I don't know what they're doing. Obviously, the government's hiding something. Obviously, they're trying to attempt some sort of control. Obviously, there is other, I call it the other. We don't really know what it is. Again, I'm more into the John Keel interdimensional, ultra-dimensional beings that come through. So I don't know if the government has any sort of alien technology or anything like that. They probably do, but I'm pretty agnostic right now. There's so many different... If you go into the ufology thing, there's so many competing ideas, it's hard to tell. But that's a problem too today, is that we live in such a either-or world. When I see an argument, and it can be any argument, I simply go, okay, this is the best argument I like. This is the second best. But just because this is the best argument, it doesn't invalidate the second best or the third or the fourth. That's not how the mind should work. We live in a world that's like, it's got to be this, and I'm just going to throw everything out. No. Keep these ideas, and as I gather data, some ideas might take over, because, and then we'll see. Again, we don't know what's going to be the truth. It's very hard. I mean, as my friend said, who's a scholar, you don't prove history, you demonstrate history. The only way to prove history is to get into a time machine and be there. So until there, we're trying to demonstrate these things and what happened and trying to find the best arguments for things. But again, the second best argument does not mean it's invalid. You know, if I think, I mean, I think Atlantis was real, but that does not invalidate Tartaria. It just means this for me works. This does not work, but I'm keeping this in my sights until more research comes through.
Yeah, but I also believe that people try to interpret things the way that best fits for them, right? How you're saying one size doesn't fit all, so therefore come up with your own cosmology, which is fine too, except what happens when you start to believe that reality and like that cosmology 100%. It's like we get into phenomenon. I forgot who I was listening to where it was like, right, phenomenology, where it's real to you, like your experience is real to you. You have faith and you have science. It's like, it's okay to have faith, you know, but what's the difference between science? Well, science has a process to be able to prove it and disprove it. It's like, well, faith, because faith is a powerful thing. You know, we're talking about something that can quite literally have, right, the placebo effect. It can quite literally change somebody's biology. Like, you know, there is spontaneous healing. I've seen it myself. So there's something to be said there. It's like, well, is that consciousness? Is that your mind? Is that you having power over this reality? Like, mind, they always tell us mind over matter, but they don't really. I think mental health is one of those things that just gets like chalked to the side when it comes to a lot of people. I don't talk about my mental health. I don't really do anything other than, you know, I'm going to try more meditation and more relaxation. I guess that's really all you can do, right? If you have the means to. But yeah, mental health gets thrown out the window in this society, especially being a man. How you were saying we can't tune into like the women, you know, what they're saying, because it's something different about it. But it's like we have our own way of going about things, right? So yeah, no, and I think this reality is a lot. The truth is stranger than fiction is how they say, right? Do you believe in aliens? Do you think there is something out there, or you don't buy it at all? Like, do you think that they're more interdimensional, you know, ultra-terrestrial? Keel was ultra-terrestrials, wasn't he?
Right. We don't, it's, again, I call it the other, like Whitley Strieber does. I mean, Whitley Strieber had his experiences, but he never said there were aliens. There was something coming through from the veil of reality, or the veil of the reality that we've been allowed to see. And it's something that our little monkey brains cannot truly comprehend, and will project images, whether it's angels or aliens or fairies or anything like that. But we truly don't know. I mean, again, the power of the mind will create the reality around us, like Cypher in the Matrix, like that story when that famous story when the natives were here and the Spanish came in their boats in the distance. They couldn't see the boats because they'd never seen it before. So all they saw was ocean until the Spanish actually landed on the beach. Because if you've never seen something and it's that alien or advanced, your mind will shut it off. I mean, we see it all the time. You ever walk your dog or something? Your dog doesn't know what the car is. It doesn't care. It doesn't. The car doesn't exist until it hits the dog, right? Or it wants to chase it. It just blocks it out of his perception reality. We humans are the same. We need shelter, we need food, and we need sex. And we will block out so much, the spiritual world, the noetic world. So I try, again, like you said, just sit still and try to experience this otherness and go from there. And then have fun and theories on the internet and talk shit and argue with people about what they are. But at the end of the day, I know my limitations as Miguel, the monkey self.
And he abandoned the ultra-terrestrial idea in 1960 something here. Let's see here. Yeah, something 67 or something. But yeah, I never thought about it like that, where they're quite literally, right? This is that ontological shock. Is that what they call it? Where it shifts your paradigm. It's like, but how you're saying it makes so much sense, where how do you even know what you're looking at? If you're
You know that the color blue didn't exist in ancient times. We had to discover it.
Is it pink or blue?
No, it was blue. Homer talks about the wine colored sea and the wine colored sky. You go to Japanese and all these cultures, there was no blue. We literally had to discover the color blue. So what else do you think we're not seeing?
Wow. But studies of ancient texts have shown that humans didn't really see blue until modern time. I could have shown something about pink is not real. It's not a color. So if colors are simply named for a wavelength, pink is not one, because it's made up of more than one wavelength. So it's actually a mix of red and purple light. Yeah, I think this is what, right? So blue is an interesting color. You have the Hans, I think Hans purple, which I think they were using as some sort of, because that color escapes this dimension. It escapes the dimension when it's cool to a certain temperature. So the ancients were on to some next level stuff that we can't even create today. You know, you're talking about a pigment from 2000 or 3000 years ago that they can't even recreate in a modern lab today. It's like they were on to something. But yeah, I never looked at it that way. And yeah, you can apply that to a lot of things, right? If there's no word for it, how do you know what it is, right? It's like,
so we see what we want to see. We're programmed to see what we should see.
Exactly. Is it Westworld that people only believe the reality they're presented, or was that Truman Show?
Truman Show. Yeah.
Have you seen the new season of Westworld? Is it any good?
No. First season is the one that, after that, big drop off.
Yeah. Miguel, when are you finishing your book on Elvis? When is that coming out?
Pretty much finished, waiting for the publisher to start putting things together, cover all that. I'm sure there'll be a whole bunch of edits, but fingers crossed it will be out end of this year, early next year.
Yeah, I know you've done a lot of work on the Elvis being a mystic. I mean, I didn't know any of that stuff until I started listening to you. Are you doing it through Inner Traditions or something? Or are you self-publishing it? Or
no, Inner Traditions, yeah.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. Miguel, you want to plug anything else before we get out of here? Let the people know where they can find your show, where they can listen to you. You have a whole bunch of it, but you've been doing this for a long time now, no?
Yes, a very long time. Didn't go full time till late 2018. I think that's when I officially went full time instead of just periodically throwing stuff out. So, but it seems like a long time, but having fun, learning.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the God Above God or do AM by Gnostic Radio. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, appreciate your time, Miguel. Thank you for all you do. And thank you for, again, your show was at the core of what Juan on Juan is, especially on its early days. And I'll be honest with you, Miguel, at first, I hated your intros. I hated them. But because I wasn't there yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't there to really know what you were even saying. And then I got to a point where I was like, these intros fucking slap. Like, this is like this. And now my favorite part of the show is the intro sometimes, you know, like, like I want the intro because you're just spitting so many things and putting and cut. How do you do that? Cause it seems like, do you have a database of clips that you know what they said? Cause I'm always like, how the hell does he get so many different clips?
just comes to me. Yeah, I have like a folder, but it just kind of comes to me.
God, yeah.
No idea, no idea. It just kind of came together. Again, I don't ask too many questions.
Well, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, as your wife would know, they say in Brazil, força.
Yeah, appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for coming on. And again, make sure to follow the show on social media at the One-on-One Podcast, tjojp.com, patreon.com/the One-on-One Podcast. If you're on YouTube, you can also become a member and catch members only episodes. Call me 407-476-4606, and I'll play those on the show. Appreciate you guys, and as always, see you on the other side.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.